Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. I am Nicolas Baines, Head of IR for Intercement. With me here today for our earnings call, or fireside chat, should I say, is Paulo Diniz, our Chief Financial Officer. The presentation will be followed by a question-and-answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast. The presentation is available online, and the webcast link has been provided to you in your registration email. Before we start, please note that on this call, you will hear discussions of non-IFRS financial measures, including EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA, and margins. Reconciliation of these non-IFRS measures to the most directly comparable IFRS financial measures is contained in the accompanying material that supports this call or the annual financial report, which is available at the investor section of our website, as well as on the Singapore Exchange website. During this call, we will make forward-looking statements about events and circumstances that have not yet occurred, including outlook and projections of Intercement's operating activities and their anticipated financial impact on our business and financial results for 2021 and beyond. These statements are based on management's current expectations, and actual results and future events may differ materially due to risks and uncertainties, including those detailed from time to time in filings Intercement makes with the Singapore Exchange Commission. Intercement disclaims any obligation to update information contained in these forward-looking statements, whether because of new information, future events, or otherwise. Please refer to the Intercement first quarter 2021 financial report for a basic discussion of the relevant risks and uncertainties. All public information is available on our website. And now, to start, Paulo, why don't we go through a general overview of our top line in terms of volumes for the first quarter 2021?
Good morning, Nick. And yes, it's always a great way to start from the top. So, even without any vaccine taken, our first quarter volume kept its health trend from previous quarters. We sold over 4.6 million tons of cement and clinker, an increase of 11% in comparison to the same period of last year, keeping the ongoing recovery we have been through since the COVID negative impact in the second quarter of last year. Perhaps the key point to note here is that Intercement has confirmed a new running rate, mainly in Brazil and Argentina, with solid growth trends for the three quarters in a row. In Brazil, even with a shy infrastructure demand, healthy drivers remain in place. By healthy drivers, I mean things such as a larger consumer's share of the wallet going into home improvement, strong self-construction demand, deurbanization movements, one-digit interest rates, despite the recent increase by the Brazilian Central Bank. So all that continues to support the growth on the housing sector. Therefore, with this scenario as a background, our Brazilian operations through Intercement Brazil posted a sales volume of over 2.1 million tons, an expansion of 9% compared to the same quarter of last year. Moving to our hermanos in Argentina, the country's demand continued to recover despite the economic uncertainties. In fact, ongoing inflation and tight FX controls continue to motivate people to allocate any money left into the construction sector as a way to keep their purchase power. Therefore, even though the bulk market continues somehow weak, the construction activity remains at good levels, sustained by the private sector's new projects and home restoring. Luma Negra recorded sales of 1.4 million tons in the quarter, a growth of 38% over the same period of last year. On the other side of the Atlantic, our African operations, with a sales volume of 1.1 million tons, booked a contraction of 7% over the same period of last year. Important to say that Egypt was the only volume offender here, with a 19% drop in comparison to the first quarter of last year. This comes as a consequence of the hibernation of our second production line in order to adjust our volume to current market demand. As we have been saying for quite some time now, industrial environment in Egypt continues to be very challenging as the army state-owned cement company continues to flood the market with its production as the new capital construction to replace Cairo seat continues to move at a slower pace. In Mozambique, market has been recovering since mid last year, backed by the resume of some minor infrastructure projects and also motivated by a better perspective for the agriculture sector. Therefore, the Cements Mozambique, our local operation, saw its volume up by 4% in comparison to the first quarter of 2020, helped by this favorable environment. Lastly, in South Africa, after a severe lockdown in the country during the second and third quarters of last year, market volumes have been recovering in a reasonable way. Also to register is that even the bulk market that was kind of dead last year is starting to show some signs of life. In this environment, our local operations, MPC, posted an 8% volume growth in the quarter when compared to the first quarter of last year. To sum up, the favorable inertia from previous quarters continued to drive our sales volume, which were up by 11% and reached almost 4.7 million tons in the quarter, as I mentioned before, boosted by interesting market dynamics in our two main markets, Brazil and Argentina.
Yes, great, Paulo. Good to hear that the two main markets kept a positive performance since the last quarters, and also that COVID impact looks to be behind us despite this second wave, at least for now. But Paulo, considering that once again we saw significant FX variation in the emerging countries' currencies during the quarter, how has it affected prices and companies' revenues?
Yes, you are right, Nick. Our 4.7 million tons in the quarter translated in sales revenues of $356 million, an expansion of 13% over the same quarter of last year. Considering only continued operations, as our Paraguay operations were sold last August. Therefore, this increase was mostly backed by Brazil and Argentina performance, on which both have grown around 20%. Despite negative effects from currency's depreciation. In a theoretical scenario, if you like, of a stable dollar rates against the local currencies, our top line would have expanded by 32% to $414 million. Looking at our African operations, which accounted for 25% of our total volume, basically, only South Africa had better prices in local currency and also in dollar terms, up by more than 10%. Meanwhile, in Mozambique, despite better prices in local currency, it declined in dollar terms. And in Egypt, well, Egypt, as you can easily guess, were down in both local and in dollar terms due to the challenging industrial environment I mentioned before. In Argentina, our controlled company, Luma Negra, contributed with 30% of our consolidated volume. Despite its undisputed market leadership, market prices declined to a level lower than $90 per ton, which affected revenues in dollar terms, although were more than offset by rising volumes. Finally, in Brazil, Intersumet Brazil increased its weight in our portfolio to 45% of the total volume sold. Basically, market prices were significantly up in local currency and also in dollar terms, although still far below international prices. This partial recovery is being function of our revised go-to-market approach and coupled by some healthy structural changes in the Brazilian cement industry, including better financial discipline with the entry of some European players. On our side, our revised go-to-market strategy is providing a much better balance between the country's meso and micro regions, between retailers and distributors, and between red mix and construction companies. Therefore, Intersumet Brazil revenues were up by 43% in Brazilian reais, while rising 23% in dollar terms due to the real depreciation.
Fantastic performance on the top line, Paulo. And indeed, as you said, it seems that core markets are now in a new running rate. Considering all the hard work that was done in costs and productivity in recent years, how this revenue level has translated into EBITDA? And could you also go through the main highlights on costs and expenses?
Certainly. Let me exclude the impact of our discontinued operations in Paraguay from costs and expenses. Therefore, our cash cost base, including expenses, variable and fixed costs, totaled $251 million, a slight compression of 1% in comparison to the first quarter of last year. Here, it's important to say that although the local currency depreciation worked in our favor when we talk about costs, improved operating efficiencies were really key to offset several cost elements that were up or somehow dollar linked. In general, our industrial KPIs continue to show improvements, including calories per kilo of clinker, co-processing, kiln reliability, and kiln performance, reflecting our continued focus on productivity and industrial efficiency. Moreover, operational cash cost contraction were supported by streamlined resources and better balancing of logistics bottlenecks. Looking at the whole picture, we were able to reach an adjusted EBITDA of $108 million in the quarter, so a stellar expansion of 59% in comparison to the same quarter of last year. And even more important, EBITDA margin was at 30%, a bit over indeed, an improvement of almost 9 percentage points when compared to the same quarter of last year. Nick, it's important to highlight here that when we talk about the last good quarters, we are basically talking about a recovery period. And let me emphasize here, recovery and not growth period, pushed by our two core markets, Brazil and Argentina. Therefore, although recovery and not growth, it's important and good enough to place Intersumet into a totally different and new level. Brazil has been the greatest contributor with an adjusted EBITDA expansion of $33 million in the quarter and a solid EBITDA margin of 36%, while in Argentina, despite the macroeconomic uncertainties mentioned before, our controlled operations have been resilient enough to post an adjusted EBITDA of $54 million, so a 19% jump in comparison to the same quarter of last year, implying an EBITDA margin of over 35%.
All right, Paulo. No doubt the changes have been notable. After so many years of crisis and efforts on cost optimization, industrial efficiency, and footprint review, important to know that now the positive effect of operational leverage is tremendous. Let's move now to the classic elements below the line that we like to say, such as working capital and CapEx. Anything relevant to comment on these cash moves in this quarter?
Yeah, well, fluctuation in operation assets and liabilities was at $64 million in the quarter. As part of our usual seasonal path. Basically, due to the rain season and plenty of holidays, including Carnival in Brazil, usually the industry books lower volumes sold in the first quarter or even in the first half vis-a-vis the second half of the year. Therefore, it is in this period of the year that the company requires more cash for rebuild inventories, as production level remains at a constant pace. CapEx totaled $23 million in the quarter, so a 69% drop when compared to the same quarter of last year, mostly due to La Mali project that is entering its final phase. Commissioning is expected by the end of the first half, but let's see how the pandemic plays in Argentina, as recently the government announced another 9 days of full lockdown. Having said that, Nick, perhaps I can have some water, let's say, your coffee, why you could comment on our debt structure here in terms of perhaps currency profile and related financial expenses in the quarter.
Yes, Paul, of course. Well, let's briefly walk through these financing points. We already mentioned in last quarterly conference calls, but it's important to reinforce it again. After the debenture refinancing back in June 20, our debt profile became around 60% denominated in Brazilian reais, which makes it much more adherent to our revenues. And as a consequence, Brazilian reais variation plays now a bigger role on debt evolution in US dollar terms. In addition to that, such refinancing of the debentures also brought a new schedule of payments, affecting the comparison with the same period of last year. Therefore, this first quarter, we paid $19 million on interest, an amount that is $33 million lower than the $52 million paid in the first quarter of 2020, mostly as a matter of timing. And there are two other factors that also contributed positively in this reduction, such as lower total debt and lower interest rates in the period. So to sum up, we ended the quarter with a cash position of $225 million and the net debt declined to $1,301 million, reducing the financial leverage to 3.33 times now from 380 in fourth quarter 2020. Again here, a very solid and sequential deleveraging pattern.
Yeah, Nick, no doubt about the remarkable deleverage seen in recent quarters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Paul, as I have just commented on our indebtedness, what can we expect going forward in terms of capital structure and leverage? Does the company plan to come back to the capital markets in the near future?
Well, Nick, coming back to the 2015 crisis in Brazil, when we noted that it would last for some years, we launched a bold liability management program at the beginning of 2017. And I must say that we have been extremely disciplined in executing it. As a matter of fact, in parallel to the successful internal turnaround of our operations, we floated Luma Negra in a $1.1 billion IPO. We also issued 830 million reais in shares at our hydroelectric plants. We execute a $800 million divestment of our operations in Portugal and Cape Verde, and another $100 million divestment in our operation in Paraguay, besides a successful 4.7 billion reais debentures refinancing last year. After all those steps, I must say that we are now in a totally different position, including a very comfortable debt amortization with no liquidity pressure until 2024. As a final part of our liability management program, we still have the 24 bonds to be refinanced and to further strengthen our capital structure by raising equity through our operating companies. Therefore, to answer your question, yes, we do plan to come to the capital markets in the near future.
Okay, got it, Paulo. And along these lines, it is public that Intersement Brazil has made an IPO filing at CVM in Brazil. Can you give us some colors on this potential IPO and also on why now?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned before, we still have two steps to go in our liability management program. The 24 bonds refinancing is an important step as we remove the debentures early call option for 24, leaving the final maturity to 27. However, in order to do that, we have to make sure that the coupon of a potential new bond to be issued is at decent levels. Therefore, further work on the company's credit statistics is a must. At the same time, we were conceiving to float our Brazilian operation, Intersement Brazil, in 2023. However, needless to say that by bringing the IPO transaction before the bond refinancing, we would significantly strengthen the capital structure of our company and dramatically improve its credit profile. At the same time, and just by coincidence here, later last year and beginning of this year, we had some private equity firms knocking at our doors, offering capital to our Brazilian operation. Well, when you have not one, neither two, but several PE houses, you know, showing up at, with an unsolicited capital offers in your door, you know that it's time to jump this PE step and go straight into an IPO, so that you can share the future value creation with your new investors, or better saying, new shareholders. Therefore, as this was a step that we had in our old liability management program, as this would facilitate any new bond issuance, as a new cement cycle is just starting in Brazil, so we decided to change the sequence of the steps, going first for the IPO of our Brazilian operation, and after that, structure the 24 bond refinancing. So this is where we are standing as we speak.
Yeah, crystal clear, Paulo. And to sort of finalize my questions, although Intersement does not provide any quantitative guidance, maybe you could share your view for the rest of the year. Or ask in a different way, can we expect the recent healthy trend to continue?
Nick, this is an extremely important question. Important because from time to time, I meet some skeptical people with some negative positions. For example, in terms of Brazil, I see people talking about the federal government budget cuts, mainly infrastructure activities and housing programs, the currency devaluation, higher inflation and employment levels, and the threat of Selic increase and the wage mass contraction, you know, generating uncertainty and caution in the productive sectors and in the Brazilian consumption. By the same token, in Argentina, I see people saying that the construction sector has reached a plateau as it was fueled by the decrease of the construction cost in dollar terms, or that the government or mayors of some big cities determine restrictions on mobility or even lockdowns, or that things will change after the October elections. And finally, in terms of Africa, I hear people saying that in Egypt, the state-owned cement plant will continue to flood the market as the construction pace of the new capital remains very slow, or that in Mozambique, the new Chinese player entering the market will grant and not sell cement, or even that the bulk market in South Africa will remain dormant for quite some time on the top of the rand appreciation, so that imports from Southeast Asia will press the local cement industry. Well, in reality, we see that the overall prospects for our African operations are better this year than in the last year. South Africa operations continues its very successful turnaround, while the dormant bulk market has started to come back. Mozambique appears to be handling nicely the postponement of the natural gas project in the north, and agriculture sectors continues to drive the country's growth, with cement being the base material for many initiatives. And finally, in Egypt, the government is back with the new construction permits and also put a proposal on the table for a 14% production cut across the board to mitigate the local oversupply. Anyway, these are all data points that comes on the positive side, data points that we did not have last year. In terms of Argentina, although we continue to have an uncertain economic scenario with inflation on one side and tight FX control on the other. Therefore, the traditional old mindset of people to see cement for real estate as one of the best proxies to keep their purchase power remains in place, and that shall continue to benefit the cement industry. Finally, in Brazil, perhaps the best collateral effect brought by the pandemic is the consumer mindset change towards life quality, and that includes home improvement, besides the unprecedented one-digit interest rates for real estate financing. This has triggered a solid pathway for cement consumption, not to mention the growing housing deficit due to the new families' formation and social mobility on the economic ladder. I could also include the current dormant infrastructure that in the past was responsible for something around 25% of cement consumption, with peaks at 28%, but down to 6-7% in recent years. But, you know, let me stop here. Therefore, despite all those points of attention I mentioned before, I firmly believe that there are strong reasons to be cautiously optimistic. And that is not only for the rest of the year, but also for the coming years.
Paulo, it was very good to hear a qualitative vision. So things look that should continue to move in the right direction. I really think we had a fruitful discussion so far, and prospects for the year are encouraging. I guess now it's a good moment to open the floor for some questions from our investors, analysts, and bankers. I would like to remember all that if you like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast.
Well, the first question comes from Jonathan Schwark from DebtWire. Do you have any cash sweeps should you execute the IPO of the Brazilian subsidiary? That is, must repay the debentures, something related to the preferred shares with Bradesco or any other you may have. Thanks for the question, Jonathan. I guess that's important to understand that the rationality for doing this IPO is to strengthen our capital structure by reducing our indebtedness. Therefore, all the proceeds, they should be channeled into paying down our debt. Therefore, as we have the situation, I mean, we should start by paying, fully paying the debentures that are sitting at the InterCement holding level. We also have, a couple of small bank debts that do have a pari passu clause with such debentures that should also be prepaid. And any money left afterwards should be channeled into the purchase of existing bonds. This is basically how we have planned to use the proceeds of this IPO?
The second question we got is from Marine Bourgeois from Ivo Capital Partners. The question is about more color on the negative working capital variation this quarter and explain the seasonality for you guys. So I think to sum up, the best idea to tackle this question is that we have maintenance stoppage scheduled throughout the year. So we have a pace of production that is relatively stable throughout the year. And for the first quarter of the year, usually, especially in Brazil and Argentina, the level of sales is lower than the rest of the year due to, as we mentioned in the call before, due to rainy season and also to large holidays that we have in Brazil and Argentina. So that brings up that we have the same level of production with low level of sales, and this increased the cash requirement in the first quarter of the year. We got a third question here. It's about what's our view on Brazilian market prospects, and do you think it's sustainable? And Paulo will get the answer for us. Please, Paulo.
Yeah. I guess that's a good question, and goes along the same lines of my optimism mentioned before. And the best way to perhaps see this is really try to build up a kind of a mental model that is basically composed by four different boxes. I mean, the first box is what I call residential remodeling. The second box is what I call residential new houses. The third box is commercial / industrial. And the last box is infrastructure. Talking about the first box, residential remodeling, basically with the pandemic, we had this mindset, you know, not only towards home office, but really towards home improvement and life quality. And we really are seeing that this is a value that is staying or increasing, you know, at all families, and therefore that should providing a sort of continuation. Therefore, we can say that this box has a vector that is pointing up in terms of demand. The second box, new houses, basically we see here the low end of this box. That means a housing deficit of 7.8 million houses today, and as we move towards 2030, basically estimate is that this deficit will increase to 11.9 million houses, you know, leaving basically a lot of work to be done here, as we do have, you know, new families formation and also social mobility, you know, people getting better income and moving up in the social scale. So this is also a box that has a vector pointing up. The third box, commercial and industrial, I would say that this is a box that has a kind of vector sideways, because you know, new constructions on the commercial side or industrial side are not that strong, although there's some remodeling. But at the same time, inside this box, we have warehouses. And warehouses are kind of an exception, because the kind of Amazon mindset of a quick delivery here in Brazil, 1, 2, 3 days, this is starting to spread over the country, and therefore warehouses is a kind of a hot commodity nowadays in the country. And finally, the last box, infrastructure. As I mentioned before, I mean, infrastructure used to be 25% of the cement volume sold. And now it's really around 5-6%. So any, you know, again, I mean, totally different than for example, in the U.S., where infrastructure represents 40%. But the point is that any infrastructure jumping here it's small jump, and this is starting to happen. We see basically a kind of a magnified effect in terms of demand. And therefore, although we are not counting on the short term on that, but very, very likely starting next year, not only for presidential elections, but even afterwards with the new president, I guess this is a box that should really start to go up. So having that kind of a mental model in mind, one can conclude that, yes, we do have to be optimistic with regards to the demand on cement.
We got another fourth question. They ask us to detail the cash position in the end of first quarter. We held around $70 million in Brazilian operation in the first end of first quarter, around $65 million in Argentina, and around $30 million in the African operations, and about $60 million in the hold costs. Well, I think with that we conclude our session of today. Paulo, I guess we had a great morning, despite some limitations for the call, but hopefully we are all safe and healthy.
Yeah, Nick, I enjoyed our fireside chat as well. Let me just reemphasize once more that I am fully convinced that Intersement has all the strengths, skills, and competences to develop and build a unique high-value pathway. We will certainly continue to stretch ourselves to be a reference in the cement industry and the player in the South America and Africa regions. I guess that's it on my side. Let me thank you all for joining us today and have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over, and thank you all for joining today and have a pleasant day. Goodbye.